folks. It's Friday the 13th. May the 13th. Friday the 13th. Did any of you guys catch me slipping last night when I said last night was Friday? That was a mistake, you know. And I think Jeff Harmon, who's here with us today, might actually clue me into why some of this stuff is happening. He's here with us now. And really interesting about Friday the 13th. We were talking about that with Paul, about the Templars and stuff. And it's kind of weird how it all synchronicity happens. Now they got the Assassin's Creed movie coming out. It's some really cool stuff. And I kind of already talked about the stuff I was going to talk about, you know, with the bombing, with the butler and the politics. I don't know. I don't know about the politics. I don't know what to do. Don't you feel helpless sometimes about it? Man, I do. I feel helpless sometimes. You guys need to check out the Facebook page. I'm really trying to push the social media thing. Facebook.com/ Lighting the Void. And then don't forget to be a light worker and sign up to the newsletter. You can get a basic beginner's astrology book. Of course, I might have to update that when we get through with this, because I'm pretty sure it's just tropical. You may not want that book when this is over with, so let me know. But a little bit about Jeff Harmon. I mean, if you guys haven't listened to Jeff Harmon already, he's been on several radio shows, Fade to Black, Coast to Coast. The Veritas Radio. He's been all over the radio, and I am very, very honored to have him here. But he's been an astrologer for about four decades, and he utilizes a variety of systems, including traditional or classical Western astrology, Vedic astrology, Kabbalistic astrology, and astrolocation astrology. He spent 10 years in Beverly Hills and has a remarkable client base and a data bank of thousands of case studies. He's currently located in West Hills, California. He has spoken on IONS, MUFON, the Joshua Tree Retreat Center, and the Association of Celebrity Personal Assistants. He has been a guest, like I said, on all these shows. He's been on TV. But besides being a lifelong astrologer, he owns Conjunction Entertainment, which is a new motion picture company. It's really cool. You can check out that website, too. And his website is jeffharmon.com. And it is a real pleasure to have you this evening, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing real good, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you here. Believe it or not, this weekend is a milestone for us here at Lighting the Void, for the audience, for everybody. And we're really glad to have you. And after the show, if you guys get time, you really need to go get on YouTube or search the podcast. Check out all the shows he's on. I think he's got a couple of shows on Fade to Black, which are really good. I think you're kind of spot on, it seems like, with this election thing that you predicted back then, right?
Yeah. The astrology has been spot on, that's for sure. Like him or dislike him, he's a freight train. And I got to tell you, I call him Mr. T. He's definitely got the power in this, in his chart. He's working some kind of magic here. And when I look at Hillary's chart, she's got some tough stuff ahead of her. Donald Trump, a lot of people don't like him because he's abrasive. He's got Mars right in the ascendant in his Vedic chart. And I really believe Vedic astrology shows the inner part of the soul. And tropical astrology is very accurate as well. But Trump has an exceedingly powerful chart. He really does. He has what I would call a classic emperor's chart. And that's why he's irritated so many people, and yet so many people like him. He's really powerful.
So do you think are we born with these traits? I mean, we're just born with this stuff, right?
Well, you know, that's an interesting topic and one of very great interest to me. And one of the things that I love about the ancient philosophies, particularly in India, Egypt, the ancient Babylonian, the Kabbalistic viewpoints, which are all pretty similar. I wouldn't say they're exactly the same, but they're really looking at us as spiritual beings having a physical experience. So modern astrology will tell us we are our sun signs, and a lot of people think there's accuracy to it because they see some similar traits. But I have to tell you, the ancient systems, in my opinion, prove we may have created the time we came in. We may have earned the astrology that we have, including if it's bad or good. I always say, forget Trinity, Neo, and Morpheus, this is probably the real matrix. And when the soul enters what we call three-dimensional time, place, and space, that's when the game starts. But that, I think, happens commensurate with the karmic energies we have created for good or for ill.
So are you saying there's not only an individual astrological events and charts and stuff, there's also, I guess, a super conscious, or maybe as a whole, astrological readings and charts? Is there anything like that?
Well, your birth chart, you come in at a time. Your birth chart's like a Polaroid snapshot of the heavens at the moment in time. There's an old legend that the embryo is attached to the soul at conception. And it's interesting, there's actually science right now that's corroborating that. They actually can see a flash of light when a sperm joins to an egg, which I think is fascinating.
I saw that on your Facebook page. That was wild.
You can thank my wife, Camille, because she's the one who found it, because I always tell this story. And I'll tell you where it comes from. It's an ancient text in Aramaic that's called the Sefer Haggadah, which in Hebrew or Aramaic means the Book of Legends. And it's many of the things that are handed down were done so orally. They were never, you know, all these scholars are looking for the manuscripts, and oftentimes they won't find them because it was never written. Well, this book was written actually in Russia, I think, right in the late 1700s, early 1800s, where they actually started writing down, these two rabbis actually started writing down these legends. And this was, again, an incredible story, because they say that when the soul enters or is tied into the body after the 9 months of gestation or whatever period it is, that's when the breathing starts. That's actually when the breath starts. And we hear legends just like this in the Vedantic, meaning in ancient India and Egypt. The soul enters the body right at first breath. And isn't it interesting, when we all die, what's the first thing that stops? Not only does the heart stop, but the breath stops. When the breath vacates, they call it spirit, or in Aramaic, it's rosh, or the spirit of breath. And I really think the Egyptians actually had conception charts. And I actually do a lot of conception astrology for women who are trying to get pregnant at good times. And I think the conception chart is every bit as important as the birth chart. But most people don't have that.
Well, wow, man, that's crazy. So how did you get started in it? I mean, you don't seem like a wild type guy that's into all kinds of crazy things and stuff. You seem like a really level-headed person, man. I mean, how did you get involved with it? When did you first get the spark for astrology?
Well, it was from my mother. In the 70s, actually in the 60s, I saw astrological documents sitting around, and I didn't think much of it. You know, I didn't have any reason to. And what happened is, in the 70s, my mother was really into astrology, and she was actually a medical, she was an RN, and then she was, I believe she either achieved a medical practitioner status or was about to, I can't remember, in the 70s. And what happened is she started telling me about my girlfriends. You know, she would say, this girl's this way and you're not compatible. Or she would say something about another one where she was just so spot on. I said, you know, what are you doing here? I said, this is not mother's intuition. I said, you absolutely have to be doing something. And she says, yeah, I'm doing their astrology. I said, oh, how'd you get that? Well, I asked her, you know, and I said, well, why don't you show me how this works? So she started to show me. And I was skeptical at first, and the more I looked at it, I said, wow, there's something to this. There's no way you could be this accurate by just observation or by, you know, knowing someone. So that's when this was BC. We were casting charts by hand back then. You literally take a piece of paper, you draw out a chart, and you get what we call an ephemeris. An ephemeris allows you to take the positions of the planet, and you populate the houses and the aspects, and you go from there. So in the late 70s, the first Commodore computers started coming out, the 64 and then the 128. And we were able to actually cast charts then, only certain types of charts. And it was really fascinating. It was a journey for me. When it really started kicking was in the 80s, because in the 80s, I stumbled on to some of the medieval texts, particularly a guy named William Lilly. Many people who get into traditional astrology start with him because he's one of the few astrologers that actually wrote everything in English. Most of the stuff was either in German, it was in Latin, it was in Hebrew, or it was in some other language that was inaccessible to most Americans. So William Lilly was actually a court astrologer in the 1600s. And he was originally the court astrologer for King Charles, who got beheaded. And he actually told King Charles that if he went against Parliament, he would lose and could lose his life. And of course, he did. He actually got beheaded. It's a matter of history. And then Lilly was brought in to Parliament, and he was actually the parliamentary astrologer. Predicted the London fire, all kinds of amazing stuff. But Lilly was the last of the caboose and of what I call the great astrologers, the traditional astrologers. And I stumbled onto that in the 80s, and then that got me into all kinds of other things. Project Hindsight was going on then. That was Robert Hahn, Robert Zoller, and Robert Schmidt were all joined together, starting to get into translating ancient texts out of Latin primarily and other languages. And a lot of stuff started surfacing. And I really felt that was the path because of its accuracy. And it's a lot different than modern astrology. It's a whole different world. Completely different, actually.
So what do you think when you say Vedic astrology? Why did you lean towards Vedic astrology? Most of the people I know or that I've learned from have just really taught me a lot of tropical, or I guess what you'd call Western astrology.
Yeah, I use them both. I think they're both amazing. See, the stuff I was just speaking about, the medieval / Egyptian astrology, is tropically based. Though, what's interesting is, see, a couple of thousand years ago, the tropical and sidereal zodiac were joined. They actually met together. And because of what we call the precession of the equinoxes, they've been separating ever since. And right now there's about a 24-degree separation. So sidereal astrology is taking the zodiac that surrounds the central sun. A lot of people refer to it as Alcyon. And that's been corroborated by NASA. In fact, our solar system is believed to be rocketing around the central sun at almost 480-something thousand miles an hour. Some folks say 483. I've heard 485. I've heard, you know, different numbers, but it's pretty fast. And every 72 years, approximately, we eke backwards 1 degree. So the fixed stars are all moving their position 1 degree approximately once a lifetime. You know, the average lifetime is 70, 75 years old. So the sidereal astrology is what Vedic astrology uses. And there's not 100% agreement on that either, because the problem you run into with all this stuff, if you talk to several different Vedic astrologers, they all give you slightly different readouts, because they're using something called an ayanamsha. An ayanamsha actually picks where in the solar system you take the tropical versus sidereal positions. And, you know, I've heard a lot of different things. I've tried a lot of different things. I've had a lot of different teachers who propose things. I had one gentleman who gave me an ayanamsha. He's now dead, but he used to do financial astrology for London, England bankers. And I thought he was kind of off when he gave it to me, and I tried it. And I said, my God, this is right on. He just smiled and said, this has, you know, been handed down traditionally in India through my family, who was generations of astrologers. And I have to say, it's right on. And that's the thing you have to watch, is astrology gets exceedingly complex the more you start looking into the various techniques that have come across in the last, you know, definitely 2,000 or 3,000 years. A lot of variables there.
So if I was, let's say, and I might actually do this, let's say I wanted to hire you as a teacher and become maybe a student if you had a spot, right?
Yeah.
And I've studied basic astrology, trying to learn my planets and signs and aspects and all that stuff. And, you know, do you have a recommended reading list, or do you say, look, just go learn this? Or,
well, I do. I have several books, depending on which one you're going to get into. There's a lot of different branches of astrology. You first have what we call natal astrology, which you probably know. That's basically looking at someone's birth chart. You can learn that in Vedic techniques. And I have to tell you, there's many different types of Vedic techniques as well. Some people use what we call the Parashara's method. Other people use the Ashtakavarga methods. There's a lot of different types or versions of Vedic astrology. They're all essentially the same, but there's different variations in the way people approach it. Nadi astrology is one of the great secrets in India. It's spelled N-A-D-I. And that one has always intrigued me. And Nadi astrology is very similar to the ancient Kabbalah. They won't teach you the secrets unless you are a Hindu-born astrologer. Just like if you're not of the cloth, you won't learn the Kabbalah or some of the secrets easily. I was lucky enough to have a couple of teachers who opened up and showed me a lot of really interesting stuff. And you look at astrology completely different when you see the way they do it. There's what we call yogas, and they don't use Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto. They only use from Saturn in. And there's a lot of logic to it. And Jupiter is the general significator for the soul. It's where the soul is in this sojourn or incarnation, if you will. And they go strictly by Jupiter and Saturn returns, as well as other yogic combinations in progressions. And it's amazing. You can see right when things happen. It's absolutely amazing. The other thing Vedic astrology uses is a lunar zodiac, which is a lot different. It's not tropical or sidereal. It's Earth lunar based. And there's 27 lunar mansions with 108 divisions in it. And that is really an interesting little zodiac. I always joke around with the astronomers. I say, I don't care how much you polish the lenses on your telescope, you're not going to see that zodiac either, because it's not there to be measured. But I have to tell you, accurate it sure seems to be, because it literally nails down right when you change what we call doshas in your Vedic chart. See, Vedic astrology is a whole nother world. It's a wonderful spiritual science to study, because what happens is when you do that, you realize you're not studying astrology, you're more studying timing, and the planetary energies are believed to be spiritual forces that are impinging upon the soul. In fact, many of your ancient astrologers, particularly back in the medieval times and Egyptian times, said that the planets act as interactive resonant portals where angels and spirits and daimons would come through. Called them demons, I call them, spiritual energies.
Sure.
And we now you get back to where the Western Bible is and what's been lost. You take things like in Exodus, there's the 72 angels to the good and the 72 angels to the severity.
Wow, I've never heard it put that way. The 72 angels to the severity. All I've ever heard is, the Shem Ham Phoresh, that's all I've ever heard it.
That's
called.
Right.
I never heard it. I don't know, defined that way.
Well, the farther back you go, the more the stuff really starts hitting the road. Then you get into the wings of the wind, which are the 24 angelic forces. There's 12 one way and 12 the other way. And, I think your guest earlier was mentioning Henry Cornelius Agrippa.
Yeah.
Now, Agrippa was actually a protege of John. I believe his name was Scherner. I've got the book right here. But that's an interesting codex, because what Agrippa was really doing is he was kind of like Manly P. Hall was back in the early 1900s. he was the custodian of a bunch of of very important information that they wanted to get put down and penned. Mm-hmm. And that's what Agrippa's job was. And I have to say, he did a good job of doing it. You know, that's what is it, a 938-page book. I've got it in my hand right now. Excuse me. But there are a lot of documents that support what I'm saying. Particularly, you get into the ancient documents. Magic is certainly one of them. But what I would say is the more deeper ones are the there's a text called the Sefer HaHaGilgal, which means the book of the cycling of the souls.
Wow.
And what we all come here for is for rectification. And they say that the soul dangles down from the highest dimensions just before it's the thrones. First there's God, then there's the seraphims, the cherubims, and the thrones. And no one's quite sure, but it appears to be that the thrones are the angels that guide the souls down into creation. And there may be more places than just Earth, and I believe that there is. And the point is that what we do here has a great effect on where the soul goes after this. And, you know, when you look at the world right now, how crazy it is, it's something to consider.
Yeah, how close is this to sidereal astrology? You hear Western and sidereal. Is it the same thing as Vedic?
That's what we were talking about before, sidereal or sidereal. Okay. Yeah, what sidereal means, and there's a lot of secret zodiacs. Sidereal simply means you're taking the larger zodiac that Vedic or Jyotish astrology uses. See, the real name of Vedic astrology is called Jyotisha.
Okay.
Jyotisha is a Sanskrit word that means the science of the light of the soul. And it really is. A lot of Western scholars make fun of the fact that many people believe Vedic astrology or Jyotish is thousands of years old. But I can tell you, I think it is. And there's strong evidence it comes from the Indus Valley and way, way back. There are thousands and thousands of documents sitting in the Madras Library. Nobody even knows how to translate them anymore. I hear there's upwards of 20,000 documents that are written on papyrus or old, you know, they're falling apart. And no one knows even how to construct the old dialect of the Sanskrit and the Tamil. And Sanskrit may be something a little bit later. But there was some really advanced spiritual knowledge going on back then. Same thing with the Egyptians. They knew a lot in ancient Egypt. In the Babylonian. In fact, there's texts now that have surfaced that Moses may not have completely written what they call the Torah or the Old Testament. It sure seems he did write some of it, but some of it may be older than that. And there are legends that date back to the numerology of nine. Like I was mentioning the Lunar Mansion a minute ago, used in Vedic or Jyotish astrology. There is 108 divisions. There's 27 lunar mansions, and there's four what they call padas or subdivisions per nakshatra. And if you multiply 4 times 27, you will come up with 108. Well, if you reduce that, that also means 9.
Right.
Okay. Then
you got 144, 153, you know. That's all in the Bible, isn't it?
Yeah, numerology is amazing. It's nothing but advanced numerology. And when you really look at astrology, that's what it is. It's extremely advanced geometry and numerology and cycles.
And so it's not really an occult thing then. Maybe it's just a science that we don't understand, you know?
It is science. And the religions have turned it into superstition.
Right.
Yeah, they really have. In fact, you know where I believe that came from? And this is one of the problems I have with the modern translations of the texts. Any Hebrew or Aramaic scholar will tell you this. You can't take – see, there's something called ciphers. Ciphers are codes that are permeated. There's Gematria, there's Notriacon, there's Achbeaker. Agrippa's book has some of this stuff in here. In fact, in the back of Agrippa's book, he's got the 22 Hebrew ciphers. Well, this isn't a theory. It's a fact. You can look at books like the Book of Psalms in the Bible. They just smacked the 150 Psalms in between the New and the Old Testament. But if you go back, the Book of Psalms was originally a standalone document called the Shemush Tehillim, which Tehillim means Psalms. And there are codes that many of the verses reduce to that are literally angel names. And there's secrets upon secrets in this stuff. Like you'll read, if you learn Hebrew or Aramaic, you'll find Elohim is a general term for God and spirits. But Elokai actually means God himself. So it really gets layered upon layers of secrets. Now, you can't put this in Latin. You can't put this in English. You can't put this in other languages and retain that kind of cryptology. You'll lose it. It's a base 22 system. You know, that's like if you want to start using kilometers versus miles, you have to convert. And that's right. Fine. But you're never going to have the same system. They divide differently. And this is the inherent problem with many of the current spiritual translations. And I'm not saying that they're not valuable. What I am saying is that they've lost some of the extremely important codes that are in them. And they're very sacred and they're very, very powerful. You know, one of the things I always say about magic, it's exceedingly dangerous because most of the people playing with it, like one of the things Aleister Crowley popularized with the Golden Dawn was the Goetia. The Goetic or Goetic magic is using the 72 demons to make them conform to a human's wishes. In my opinion is that's the highway to hell. In fact, many secret societies screw around with this stuff.
Yeah.
And they will end up doing sacrifices. It is exceedingly dangerous. And one of the most foremost things warned against by many of the ancient saints and prophets. And you know what? They're right. Because anybody screwing around with that stuff, you can't control it. And what I think is happening in astrology is we may very well be experiencing the divinely bridled spirits, angels, and demons playing out an interactive conscious with us. And I think when people play around with magic, they kick the walls down and they can cause a whole nother paradigm that's exceedingly dangerous.
What about just like doing just banishings? What about that?
I think banishings are great. Yeah, banishings are wonderful in invoking, you know, angelic help and force. I think one of the things the religions have sadly not allowed people to learn is how powerful we all are. And that's some of the documents. You can study this. There's one in particular. It's called the Nefesh, which means soul, and constriction, which is a strange sounding word, which goes hasitzim, which means it's God's constriction of light in order to have the three-dimensional worlds exist, which, you know, quantum physics and many other sciences are saying there's no way, you know, we can measure what's holding all this together. I mean, everyone finds out at a very young age, there's molecules and atoms and all these various different building blocks in physics and creation. Well, the problem is it's been proved now many times that consciousness has a great effect on the reaction of matter. Even though, yes, the dust we see on our shelves and all the, you know, things we have to do every day, the rust on the cars and, you know, we have to wash our clothes. So we think it isn't manipulatable, but it really is. There's etheric energy all the way around us. Healers have proven this. Many very advanced ascended masters have proven this, saints and prophets, however you want to call it. And I think what's important is that we are literally creators of things around us. A belief is such a powerful thing. One of my great interests is using astrology, particularly Jyotish astrology, with psychology. And I have a lot of clients who are psychologists and psychiatrists, and we have some wonderful discussions and research into these areas because there's an old expression, what you believe becomes your reality. And it's so true. Belief is a very interesting phenomena about the human conscious mind, because if you believe something, you begin now to form a reality around that. And that's not to say that the reality we all experience, which is gravity in the three-dimensional world, isn't constant. But look at everyone's perception of reality. It's completely different.
It's wild. I mean, they got I don't know if I'm correct about this, but what you're talking about at the Hadron Collider, all the experiments that they're doing there, where they had people, you know, they're trying to manipulate light particles, which, you know, that scares me too a little bit. But they said that these light particles would just move as they would move naturally. But if someone put their eyes, like their eyeballs, like they peered into the machine or the whatever they were looking in, almost like these particles would stop and wait, like they were being, you know, waiting to be told what to do, you know?
Well, this now gets into things that the ancient yogis and saints and prophets would call samskaras in the East or elementals in the West, that we literally, in fact, the Egyptians were very adept at this. This is what healers do. They can project positive things on another person, and there's scientific hard evidence that shows we see the shift. Kirlian photography is one of them, but particularly just people healing. That relates to astrology directly, because what I find is that when there's transits and progressions that are of various natures, people are experiencing these. And when you look at Vedic astrology, they have a lot of spiritual documents to support that, like the Upanishads. I don't know if you've ever heard of those, but there's a group of text called the Upanishads. It's very similar to like the saints and the prophets and the, you know, various segments of the Bibles, the writings, you know, like
I've been listening to it all week on audio since I started listening to your shows. Downloaded the audio book and I've been listening to them.
Oh, cool. Yeah, well, there you go. And they're very abstract. But in one particular Upanishad, which I think is very interesting, they talk about graha, which actually is the Sanskrit word for planet. And it means seizer or grasper of the aura. And now you go right back full circle what I was talking about earlier, that when people are having a transit or a progression, if they're told astrology superstitious and the work of the devil, well, they never have any way of knowing what's going on in their life because they're told it's superstition. But let me give you some examples. All the time, every single day of the week, I have the blessing of consulting with people who are looking for direction in their lives, and I'm able to visually show them. The internet right now is just the most amazing tool for astrology. I mean, the internet has changed the way I do astrology in the last decade. It's so amazing because now, instead of people coming to my office, I have clients all over the world. They get a code from me and they join right into my computer and they can literally make a movie about the entire session. In fact, I do some tutoring with people learning astrology the same way. Sure. And it's so powerful because I sit there with my mouse and point to planets and I point to cycles and houses and timing. And you know, it's very, very visual. And I have a whole bunch of presentation material that supports a lot of things that I talk about, like the location maps and location astrology. But what's amazing with it all is that people see why they're having a particular experience. Here's a classic example. I had one guy who was a psychiatrist. He moved to a location on a Moon-Pluto latitude crossing. And he, I don't know how he got my name, but he called me up and he says, can I do a session? I said, sure. And he wanted to know why he was literally so emotionally distraught. He was on medication. One of his colleagues had prescribed medication. And he said, what has happened ever since I moved here? And I said, well, look, you're bullseye right on the latitude. And that's what's so cool about astrology now with the internet. You can literally see longitude and latitude right where I'm pointing. And he said, oh, my God, I moved right on. I said, yes, you did. And then I clicked the textbook meaning of that. And he goes, oh, my God, that's exactly what I'm experiencing. Now, here's the point I wanted to make. Because he now realized that the energy he was experiencing was not him, but it was something, a phenomena that was happening to him at that location. He completely changed his viewpoint. He said, well, if that's the case, he said, I got this. He said, you know, it's not going to go away, but he says, at least now I know what the heck it is and I'm not losing my mind. So here's my point. If an airline pilot were taking off and superstitiously hoping that he was going to make it to his destination, I don't know if I'd want to fly with that guy. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You see, whereas if he looks at the radar and says, okay, folks, you know, we know we have, you know, some rough, bumpy weather here for the next, you know, 200 or 300 miles. So we're going to take it up a little higher so we don't, you know, have to bounce up and down. Or we're going to keep the fasten seatbelt sign on and we're not going to serve coffee. That's my point. Rather than making it out to be superstitious, but treat it as the ancients did. They literally... the best description I can say, the difference between modern astrology and ancient astrology, not that modern astrology is superstitious, but ancient astrology was astronomy scientifically applied. And it's not because it's ancient, it's because it was. And I'm telling you, it is absolutely phenomenal how smart some of these people were. And all the time I get people trying to deify me. Oh, my God, you were right on. I said, no, the science I'm using is right on. You know, yeah, I may have worked very, very hard to get good at it. But if I didn't have that science reliability, you know, it's very, very accurate. And the only time I have found that it hasn't been is if I found a tricky chart and I couldn't read it right.
Right.
And then I usually am very busy going back and saying, well, why did I call that? You know, and again, it's a formidable task to learn these sciences. But once you do, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing how accurate it is. And what I think the biggest enjoyment I get is I help people. That's, you know, when I get someone saying to me, you know, I'll get a client who will call me back, you know, 3 or 4 years later, and they'll make comments like, wow, you know, you really helped me to see clarity. I was, you know, very depressed, or I was not doing well, and this gave me direction. And that's very pleasing to me, because that's, I really believe, what it did. Your guest was mentioning Maimonides.
Right.
Okay. I actually have a letter here from a bunch of rabbis in the Middle Ages to Maimonides in Israel, because, you know, he was a healer in Israel, right?
Can you hold that? Because we trust me, we want to hear that one. That's going to be rad. You guys wanted a real astrologer. Here he is, folks. Jeff Harmon. We'll be right back. Something to talk about Maimonides. You said you got some, maybe some letters or something? I'll let you talk about that, Jeff.
Yeah, it's cool. Robert Hand actually was the guy who deserves the credit on this. In fact, I got it on the shelf here. Let me just grab it. I was looking at it the other day. And I heard, I was passing through, and I heard, you know, your last guest. Yeah, this was a correspondence between the rabbis of southern France and Maimonides. And I think, I can't remember the era, but it was probably 14th. Oh, no, it was earlier now. It was around the 1100s, but yeah, it was somewhere right in that area, about the 11th century. Essentially, all these rabbis were writing Maimonides and saying, we really help people. We help medical astrology. We help cure people. We help people see various different aspects of their life. And one of the types of astrology that's very, very formidable and was used almost exclusively throughout the Middle Ages is something many Westerners know as horary, but my favorite word for it is interrogation astrology. It's literally divinational. So they all wrote to Maimonides, who was this great religious figure, and he wrote back scathing attacks on astrology. Oh, it's the work of the devil. You can't do this. And it's just, there's always been dissension, always probably will be, between religious people and people who do astrology. And I've had to contend with that, and I'm lucky that I haven't had anybody vehemently attack me or anything like that. But I'm also, I don't think doing astrology per se the way a lot of astrologers do it, because I really believe it's a sacred science, and I'm trying to point out the divinity in it. And maybe that's why. And I think that's what ancient astrology does. It actually points to God. It points to angels. It points to spirits and intelligences and the whole hierarchy of creation, where modern astrology really doesn't do that. It's focused on sun signs, and there's a lot of good in modern astrology, but it's using a broken zodiac. And I think where a lot of this came in was right around the separation of the two zodiacs, the sidereal and the tropical zodiac. The Romans had sacked the temple in Israel, and I really believe that they released a lot of demons, and there was all kinds of paranormal phenomena that happened around that. And again, this is right around the time of the crucifixion and all that. This is a very important time. That's right when the two zodiacs were joined, and now they've been separating. You know, and there's been nothing but war on this planet ever since.
It's interesting that you say that, because I was listening to, I forget the radio show that you, I think both you and Camille was on. And, you know, it's almost like they were kind of poking at Camille, you know, a little bit for what she believed about how this stuff was, you know, it's already written. And, you know, she's fine with that. And she believes what she believes. And here she is with probably one of the best professional astrologers we have in this country, you know. And you guys, you both understand each other. And yet, I don't know why it's such a hard message to get across, because if you ask a religious person about these texts, what about this? What about when they're talking about the jewels and the seven seals and the 144,000, or these quotes where all these numbers, they add up to nine, every single one of them.
Do
you guys not see this stuff, or is it something that you just don't want to believe? You know, I mean, it's kind of frustrating, you know?
Well, this is the problem, is dogma is really what a lot of, not all, but a lot of the religions have turned into. This is why you see, no matter which religion you pick, there's always branches that break off from it. Look at Buddhism started because everyone found Hinduism got too concretized with the caste system.
Yeah.
You see? So, and look at all the different sects of Christianity you have. You have the same thing in Judaism. You have in every religion, every major religion always has branches because somebody gets too dogmatic. They take a little truth, or they may take a lot of truth, and they will then concretize it so that nothing's acceptable outside of the confines of what they believe, the way they believe it. Everyone's got their own version of God, and they don't want to hear any possibility other than that version. And I think part of it might be the spirits themselves. You know, C.S. Lewis was an interesting guy, because he actually wrote a book called The Screwtape Letters, which is one of my favorite little books. It's a very inexpensive book. It's about $10. And he essentially makes a disclaimer. He cannot tell you where the book came from, whether it's fact or fiction. But it's all about demons, how they literally rejoice when someone goes into a religion and then finds out that it's not all that it was meant to be. They find the hypocrisy. And, you know, now you come back full circle to some of the ancient texts, particularly in the Kabbalah and the Vedantic. If we could see what was about us, I think we would probably not keep our sanity. And we only see on a three-dimensional, five-sense, very narrow spectral band of light. And consciousness is also very, I think it's even more narrow. There's an old saying that cleft we have beneath our nose and our upper lip was what the angels marked us so that we couldn't see anymore. We forgot. And these lives are very, I think, myopic in awareness compared to what we're around. I have the blessing to be around stuff that I have to do sometimes, like clearing places, clearing people, or looking in the paranormal phenomena with astrology. Like oftentimes I'll have clients call me up and they'll have some crazy event or thing that's happening in a house or in a business, and I will seek to clear it for them. And I actually use angelic squares that are derived right directly out of scripture. And beliefs not required. I have had so many people tell me that it shifted the energy.
Anytime you hear somebody say beliefs not required, that means that they've had one personal experience after the other, after the other, after the other, and they can't prove it, but they know right. It's true.
It's exactly right. Well, that's the argument I get with interrogation astrology. And, you know, there's several branches that are very fascinating in astrology. We know about the birth chart astrology where, you know, that's your birth chart. But then there's a science called interrogation, also known as horary. In India, they call it prashna. Prashna actually means the same thing. It means divinational. You don't need your birth chart. You don't need anything. You just cast a chart for the moment. That is probably one of my most formidable tools that I have used for years and years and years. I have thousands of those things in a database. I've never seen one wrong yet, other than if I read it wrong.
You use missing expensive software?
No, you have to. I use on that particular stuff. I use Parashara's Light, and I also use Solar Fire 9. Yeah. But it's how you read it. And what I love about Solar Fire is I can roll my own pages, and I've customized it to use the Egyptian zodiac combined with a very specific set of tools. And you cannot use the modern zodiac. You have to use the original zodiac. And when you get back into some of the angelic stuff that corresponds, everything is based. The real zodiac is based on the sun and the moon. And the reason why, the sun is the seed. If you look at the glyph of the sun, it's the circle of infinity. Everything is cyclic. It always starts out as an embryo or a seed or an infantile thing, and then, of course, merges into youth, and then, of course, adulthood, and then old age, and then, you know, passes away and recycles. I don't care if you're talking about a tree, an animal, a human being. Everything is cyclic. Everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's like a three-act story, right? So the same principle is the sun. The moon is the crucible of creation. It's the alchemical nurturer. It's like the soil in the spring. And the cross is the earth. It's the manifestation into three-dimensional four elements. In fact, the cross represents the four elements: Archangel Michael, fire; Gabriel, water; Uriel, earth; and, of course, Raphael's the air. And what's interesting is you could also say the cross is the eastern, western horizon, the midheaven, and where the sun is at midnight. So I'm not demeaning anything that the cross means in religion. What I am saying is it's extremely ancient, and it is spirit concretized in matter. Well, if you look at just the glyphs of all the planets, it's so fascinating because Mercury is the crescent of the moon over the sun over the cross. Venus is the sun over the cross. It's the friend. Mars.
I've always wondered about that. Because they have a lot of the same symbols, you know.
Well, they are. They're all combinations of the sun and the moon and the cross. Just look at them. Mars is the sun with the cross up to the right. Now, the modern glyph is with an arrow, but it really was the cross at a right angle. The force of materialism over the sun. Now, what's interesting, Jupiter is the crescent of the moon over the cross. That's why it's the great benefic. And If it's hard to do this on a radio show, but if you were to look at that's one of the first things I teach people in astrology is if you look at the rulerships of the ancient zodiac, you can't put Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto in there. It won't work. You'll break it. And there's what we call bounds. There's daytime triplicity lords, nighttime triplicity lords, participate. There's also what we call the bounds or the terms. And these are the five wanderers, which are the planets other than the sun and the moon. And again, forget Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto. Don't put them in there. And what's so fascinating is if you use this zodiac in the extremely complex way it's applied, you are now applying the ancient principles. And Vedic astrology does the same thing, exactly the same thing. And it works.
You know what tears me about this whole thing is, you know, when you mentioned the Golden Dawn and Crowley, you know, the original Golden Dawn teachers had it out for Crowley because of what he was doing. Everything you speak about.
Yeah, A. Waite.
is in the Golden Dawn. Everything that you've spoke about, and then
well, it is.
Crowley
it is.
Kind of, I don't know. Would you say perverted it maybe or?
Crowley is a perfect example of a guy who acts intellectually smart, and he's a spiritual idiot. He's a complete fool because this is so typical with magic. In fact, the whole Golden Dawn thing to me is fairly paper thin anyhow because they all – Mathers, who was fairly arrogant when he was young in A.E. Wade, they all found this stuff in a bookstall in London. They found it in a bookshop. That's where they found it. And then a lady was contacted in Germany. And, you know, Germany's steeped in this stuff. Well, I wonder why. If you go back farther and farther, and I'm not in any way deifying the rabbis, but that's where it came from. The one of the probably most prominent figures, I think, to have drawn breath was two, Rabbi Abulafia and the Maharil. The Maharil was a man who, you can acquire this book, it was, he actually had and penned the sacred holy magic, which if anybody reads that book, they will learn in a second. You're not going to get anywhere with magical circles, summoning spirits, controlling them with sigils, and all this other crap that people do, because you'll get possessed. That's exactly what happened to Crowley. You know, Crowley, L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons were doing sex magic together.
Yeah, I've read about that. It's
Parsons,
wild.
You know, yeah, JPL. And a lot of stories to that one. But, yeah, and then, of course, L. Ron Hubbard took off and, I don't know, found Thetans in the mountains or something. That whole thing is pretty bizarre. But long story short, I'd say Crowley, very dangerous stuff.
This
is the problem with all this stuff. We ain't smart enough to figure it out, and we're not. Even Agrippa's book, if you go through it, there's a tremendous amount of information compiled there. And, you know, hats off to a guy in the 1400s penning a book of that magnitude, but he had a lot of help. It was John Tritemus. That's who I was thinking about before. Tritemus was his mentor. And Tritemus was really the holder of information. A lot of people, same thing with Manly P. Hall, the Philosophical Research Center here in Los Angeles, who I met Manly P. Hall back in the 80s.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, he was huge. But see, Manly P. Hall, and I'm not demeaning him in any ways, but he really got all that information back at the turn of the century from a secret society out of Orange County. And that's a mystery who they were, but there is no way a guy had that kind of access to information. And you find there are many people who are holding things like this. The problem with it all is there's a lot of truth in it, and there's also a lot of murky untruth in it. It's not that it isn't good, but most of the ones who really, really have knowledge, true knowledge, it all comes from the angels, right. And it really does. There's no bones about it. The astrology was never empirically deduced. In fact, we have exact statements to that effect. In India, the ancient yogis were rishis. Rishi means seer. The Kabbalists, they talk about how they would literally have an angel of God visit them. That's called a Rosh Hodesh, which is the spirit of God or an angel coming to them and communicating this stuff. The book of Abramelin by, again, that was written by Abraham, but his real name was Rabbi Maharil. His grave is still in Prague. Germany was steeped in some of this ancient stuff. And, of course, Hitler got fragments of it. Many people's gotten fragments of it. But I would say that the Maharil probably changed the course of history, just like I think there's ascended masters right now changing the course of history. You know, I get this all the time. Everybody's always calling, when do you think the world's going to end? Well, I don't know that it's going to, you know, and it's certainly not up to me to say when it does.
What they might be asking you is, when do you think the world's going to, wipe us out and start over? The planet's probably not going to go anywhere. We've already had one deluge, you know.
Yeah, well, you know what? I have to fall back on the Shemitah. And if you remember, there was a guy, and I don't mean in any way to demean him because he was very scholarly and a very nice guy, who wrote the book on the Shemitah. And last fall, he predicted all kinds of things were going to go in hell in a handbasket. And it hasn't happened. Now, he's not wrong either. There has been a lot of trouble, and the mounting, escalating debt keeps happening in the world. But to answer your question, my take is, if you take the Hebrew calendar right around the year 6000, which is just a few hundred years from now, seems to line up really, really well with another event. And that is when we ingress into the next sign in the sidereal zodiac. Many people said we've hit the Aquarian age already. And I personally don't think so. From what I can see, and I'm not claiming I'm right, but from all the evidence I can see, it's a few hundred years from now, maybe about 240. I might be down to like 230 something right now. I actually have research on that. I just don't have it in front of me. And I think also we are on the precipice of a new era that is beginning right in front of our eyes. And that is the winter solstice of 2020. Notice I'm not using Pluto here or Neptune or Uranus. The ancients would measure when Saturn and Jupiter would conjoin, which happens every 20 years, but when they would do so in very specific astrological configurations, particularly when they would join either in Aries, which happens just short of 1,000 years, every 1,000 years, or when they would change a triplicity, which is earth, air, fire, or water. Now, we have that happening for the first time in an air trine. Saturn and Jupiter will now make a Star of David, or a hexagram, if you will, in the air signs, commencing right in 2020. Now, there are different astrologers dispute. Some use what we call mean average conjunctions, and I've looked a lot at that. I personally think what's very unusual about this one is it happens on what we call the precise conjunction, like right when they join, is exactly, not a little close, exactly on the winter solstice of 2020. And the chances of that happening are pretty unusual. And what this meant, these are called mutation conjunctions, the world changes. This is when a new era commences. The last time this has happened was 1702. And that was the commencement of what we now call the Industrial Revolution. And we've been in it for a little over 240 something years. So they're not exactly to the 240 years, but they're close, because the Gregorian calendar, as well as what we call a year, is different than what astrology would call a year. They use a sol lunar calculation, which is actually a little more accurate. And
I've always wondered about that, because the history of man goes back thousands and thousands and thousands of years, but the increase in technology has increased like compound interest, or maybe even faster in the past couple hundred years. And I'm trying to explain this to, you know, people, my friends and stuff. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, don't you understand that we're talking about just a very small portion of the time of the species of humanity where we've increased in knowledge in this stuff. Like, it's unbelievable. It's almost like you would think aliens were involved or something, you know?
Yeah, maybe they are. One thing's for sure, something is ramping this up. That's an interesting point. Call them what you will, but there's definitely some help here going on that's guiding history. This last conjunction in the 1700s, I mean, let's just take a quick accounting. We went from basically fairly barbaric travel, metallurgy, and production of things to, in the 1700s, we were seeing steam come online. There was now beginning to be much more advanced smelting processes and metallurgy. Railroads were coming into play by the late 1700s, early 1800s. Of course, by the mid 1800s, we had a railroad across this country. You had advanced weaponry, machine guns, mass production, and so many other things that we didn't hear about, maybe on the mainstream. Electricity showed up, the actual ability to transmit and generate electricity and understand it. By the 1900s, you know, a lot of people forget how amazing Tesla was. If it wasn't for Nikola Tesla, we wouldn't have the electricity, somebody else could have come up with it, but he's the guy really who's credited with transmission of alternating current through transformers.
Yeah.
Thomas Edison, he was doing DC. Well, my God, that meant you had to have a generator sitting on every street, you know, corner, on every block. That was insane. So Nikola Tesla came along with the ingenious idea, hey, let's throw the voltage up, you know, thousands of volts, and then we don't care how much we lose. We'll just drop it back down to 110.
And we'll so just alternate this stuff, man. We don't have to worry about generating it, right?
Exactly. And well, no, you have to generate it still. But
yeah,
now you have a way of transmitting it where the voltage losses in the transmission are very – they become moot. They're still there. But he was ingenious in many of the things that he did. And I believe he did come up with free energy. I really do. And, of course, they can't make money off of that. So the if you just go back to what I'm talking about, and that is the – look at where we've gone. My God, in this last century, the mechanics, the vehicles – we are now staring at, I remember, you know, in the 60s, everybody thought by the 80s, we'd be flying around in cars. You know what? I actually think we will see that very, very soon. And the reason why, the technology is all there, free energies and many other types of energies are there. It hasn't become commercially feasible. But what is happening right now is the tremendous abilities in materials research has and computing power is absolutely astonishing right now. I mean, we see it on TV already. Look at if your car, someone pulls in front of you, your car stops for you. Yeah. I mean, that takes a lot to do that because that's not just a computer. You have to have braking control systems controlled by the computer. I mean, we're going to see, there's no way people could have ever flown around before unless they had computers doing it for them. They can't even, we can't even drive on the streets without banging into each other. So flying is a whole other world. And, you know, we've had computer controlled planes for probably 30 years, 40 years now. So it's there. And I think that's what this Jupiter-Saturn conjunction means. We are heading into a high-tech era, which is going to be mind-boggling because it's exponential right now when people create things. I mean, you can print things with a 3D printer. You know, it's absolutely amazing. The stereolithography, the prototyping, the computing power, that can be done. And we're literally going to see in the next 30, 40 years technology that I think is going to be astonishing because it'll become commercially feasible.
I want to touch base on this one more time because I think that not only do I need to hear it, but there's a lot of people in the audience that needs to hear this too. And I'm just want to ask you because, and I'm not trying to bring the Golden Dawn up over and over again, but in the beginning of it, it's just the outer order and they learn to balance out their elemental natures and then they move on to planetary. And then at the very top of this Rosicrucian order, they learn to use sidereal astrology and how to use that. And it's at the top, which is something that you're using just now, right?
Well, yeah, and there's more than that. Let me tell you, there are secret zodiacs where you use certain fixed stars that are completely different than sidereal. See, sidereal is a very generalized term. Sidereal just means you're using something other. You're using some galactic reference other than the sun. See, most tropical astrologers are using a solstice equinoctial based system. It never, ever, ever changes. That really should be called the fixed zodiac because it is. It's based on the spring equinox, the summer solstice, the fall equinox, and the winter solstice. Is it accurate? You bet it is. It's right on. In fact, a little unknown secret to many in India, in the Nadi branch of astrology, that's called Tajika. And a lot of Western scholars believe that the Greeks and the Egyptians gave it to the Indians. I think it's exactly the other way around.
Gotta be.
It is. And there, a guy named Richard L. Thompson has put some very compelling evidence forward to support that. And I think the Greeks may have very well been the disassociated Brahmins, who was the priestly caste in India, that matriculated over to Greece. I mean, if you look, it's not that impossible in terms of distance for them to get there pretty easily. And the Egyptians clearly were involved in sidereal and tropical. It just gets misty. And I heard the comments about the, the Alexandria Library. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's gotten penned is one thing. What was handed down in secret traditions is another. I have a huge library. I don't claim to have a definitive library, but I have a lot of books on ancient astrology, and particularly certain astrologers from basically the first century up until, I'd say, maybe the 1300s. There's so many references to secret methods in astrology, and the people quoted, they can't even find them. They don't know who they were. They don't know when they lived. They don't know when they died. They don't even know who they are. And I tell you, I've had the blessing to try some of these methods. One of my favorite is Guido Bonatti, who wrote a 1,600 plus page corpus on astrology, electional astrology, which is picking auspicious times to commence events like getting married, taking trips, buying a house, selling a house, which I use these every day for clients, is amazing. And I mean, this is a guy, let's do the math here. This is 800 years ago? Yeah. It's amazing stuff. And I got to tell you, you won't find this stuff anywhere else. I've tried these methods for years, and they work. You can't use the modern astrological methods.
It makes you wonder what was handed down verbally, verbally.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And again, I have one of the most advanced alchemists and truly sacred people was the Maharil. The Maharil was Abraham. He wrote a book called The Sacred Magic of Abram El Nimeish. And speaking of the Golden Dawn, Mathers actually translated that book, and Crowley got his hands on it. Yep. The problem with it wasn't an accurate translation. There's another one out done by, I forget the guy's name, Goethe and Dunn or Dern or something. And they did a really good job. But what both of those books prove is anyone playing around with magic who's not guided or sanctioned by an angel is on the highway to hell, literally.
Yeah.
And they really are, because you can't, I'll speak for myself, I ain't smart enough to figure out creation. Right. And I can tell you, anybody who thinks they are is really barking up a very arrogant tree. And the more I study this stuff, the more humble I get. And there's an old saying that really the beginning of wisdom is the not so much fear, but the awe of God and creation. Right. And boy, that couldn't be more true. Because when I just looking at astrology, and thanks for the comment before, but I think we know very little about astrology compared to what's really there. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. The more I look at astrology, the more I'm looking at it, this is an interactive consciousness that's happening to all of us in our own unique, completely individual way. There's no two charts that are the same. I always get angry at modern astrologers, because to call someone a Pisces or an Aries is so demeaning to the human spirit and soul. I mean, come on. There's millions of people born every single month with the sun in one sign. Go up and look in their eyes. There ain't a single one of them the same. Not a single one.
Yeah, well, got your moon and your Mars is somewhere and they're all somewhere. But then, I was looking at this, I guess it was Vedic or Jyotish, and one of the guys on YouTube was talking about, your sign can change in your life. See, a lot of people don't know that, and I don't know if he was right, but
what he's talking about is a primary direction, or he's probably talking more about solar arc progressions.
Okay.
Which means, in solar arcs, now you're getting into the stuff that I really like. The ancient astrology used something called primary directions. That's a whole nother kind of astrology. Primary direction means when you're born, the latitude you're born at. Okay, so where were you born?
I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Okay, so you take that latitude, the ascensional rate of the Earth's rotation at that latitude will be different for someone born in Chicago or someone born even 100 miles north of you. In fact, technically, it changes every degree of latitude and every minute of latitude. And what happens the signs don't ascend at the same rate. Those are called primary directions. And that is advanced stuff. You have to use trigonometry. And I always say, I think the air and the food was cleaner back in Egypt and other places because these people were doing this stuff without slide rules, without calculators, and they were pretty damn accurate. They would literally take the ascensional rate at the longitude someone was – I'm sorry, the latitude someone was born, and they would progress the chart at the ascensional rate per sign. See, the Earth, if you look at the Earth, the reason we have seasons is because we're about 23 degrees and some minutes. I think it's 23 degrees, 30 minutes at an angle. And I could be wrong. I read about that. It's called the obliquity of the ecliptic, which is a fancy word for meaning the Earth is tilted. And science can't explain why. In fact, when you have an earthquake or a tsunami, it tethers back and forth like a pendulum hanging on a string, and there's no string there, and that's a scientific fact. They don't know why. That's called the Earth's wobble. You know, a lot of people have said, well, the astrology is all wrong now because we've had earthquakes and tsunamis. Well, I got news for them. You'd have to have an earthquake or a tsunami that would move the Earth 10 miles. It's simple math to get less than a tenth of a minute of change in the astrology. And I guarantee if we have an earthquake moving this planet, you know, 50 or 100 miles, we're going to be looking for a new place to sleep tomorrow morning. It would be a massive quake. It's amazing how precise the solar system is. I mean, It's right on.
Yeah, it's nuts, man. There's no way. I'm with you. There's no way we're going to comprehend it. And that's why I tell people, you know, you guys want to talk about God and you're holding this book up in the air like that's the word of God. And I don't think that you could narrow down whoever created this thing to that book that was written by humans. I just don't think it's possible. You know, I don't think it's possible.
There's a lot of merit to the virtues that are espoused in the scriptures in English. But boy, when you get back farther, you know, that they say that this is an interesting thing in quantum physics. They say, talk about the number 9. Now, don't quote me. I have a book right now. It's the Nefesh, which means soul, Hadzitzim, which means the constriction of divinity into creation. And what's fascinating about this is it talks about how the Orphanim, which surrounds the throne of God, are chanting permutations of the 22 letters of God in, I think it's 10,800 variations per every hour, and they are never, ever, ever, ever the same. Wow. So in other words, when we look at creation, in fact, quantum physics, a guy that I really like is a good friend of mine, Claude Swanson. We've discussed these topics. And one of the interesting things is reality might be that creation is being recreated every moment. And yes, it's the same dust on the windowsill. It's the same, you know, dirty clothes we got on, or we got to wash the car. But creation as we know it, all matter is recreated every instant. And it's never recreated the same way again. And that's pretty astounding when you start thinking about that. You know, most people, we all, and I myself included, we all can get really jaded. You know, well, it's just another day, right? And, you know, you got to listen to George Carlin when you really have to look at the irony of human myopic, you know, myopic outlooks, because he always busted on that. And I always loved that about him. But, you know, when we stop and take a moment and look, you know, anyone who's had a child, take a look at the baby pictures or take a look at your own baby pictures.
I always say that. And people look at me like I'm stupid. You know,
you can't get that back.
I'm like, I said, you guys have had a child, right? And this is coming from atheism, right? And they're like, yeah. Right. I'm like, when I grabbed my son and he opened his eyes for the first time, the light in that baby's eyes, I have never seen anything like it in my entire life.
Well, I'm telling you.
It's gone, but it was there, you know. It was just sitting there with my mouth open looking at him going.
It's still there in everybody. You know, it really is. I don't think, You know, one of my favorite mystics in modern times was a man named Dr. Stylianos Ateschlis. Some people pronounce it different. He was known by some people as the Magus of Strobilos over in the island of Cyprus. This guy had command. And see, this is really back to the Golden Dawn and all that stuff. The true saints and prophets had some portion of command of the fourth hierarchy. Now, that's pretty deep stuff because, as the Maharil and many others had put it, the fourth hierarchy isn't just the devil. It's Lucifer, Satan, Belial, and Leviathan, and the eight legions and sub-princes beneath that. They are the unredeemed fallen spirits. And you can't get the keys to that or any portion of that unless you have an upper angel working or a group of them working with you, because you can't control them. And people like Crowley and many of these secret societies, I know I've had clients come to me who are in certain secret societies, I won't mention who, and they would tell me stuff and I would cast charts and I'd say, get the hell out of there, because you know, it's like the Hotel California. You can check out, but you ain't going to leave unless you get away from it. And it's like, it always ends up with some woo-woo, we have the secret. And people get sucked into this vortex that oftentimes is a very, very dark place to be. And, you know, there's been a lot of rumors about certain folks in high places in this world. And you hear these rumors, you know, they come out from many different people. And you know what they say about rumors, don't you? They're usually true.
Right.
That stuff really goes on. And it's pretty hideous. And you know, thank God, literally, for the most of us, most people who don't play with that stuff won't have those issues. Hmm. But the ones that do, or they have karma attached to it. And that's, again, some of the compliments I have to hand to Jyotish astrology. I've seen it. I mean, I've had people, or I've looked at their charts and go, oh, my God, you know, what just happened to you? And they go, you wouldn't believe it. I said, well, try me. I see the chart. And stuff like that would be happening or has happened during those time periods. You know, in a lot of people think astrology is predicting the future. I don't think it's predicting the future at all. I think it's showing probable outcomes in what we call time, or more importantly, it's like a vector releasing in our perception of time. And the way to avert it is when you become self-consciously aware that it's there, just like an airline pilot. If you don't know that you're heading into a Category 4 hurricane, you think it's just sunny out and everything's going to be great, and all of a sudden, whammo, here comes the storm front. Well, but if you knew it was there, you wouldn't head into it, would you?
Right.
Well, you see, or you'd certainly change the way you were approaching it.
Well, I'm going to tell you this, and there's people listening to this show right now that I can assure you that are involved in probably the Golden Dawn and stuff like that. There's also people listening to this show that still have doubts, you know, and the confusion lies is, again, at the top of this is at the top of the Golden Dawn or that work is the astrology, right? That's at the top. And at the bottom, you're dealing with elementals. And, I mean, I sometimes wonder if it wasn't for Crowley, if people would have a different viewpoint, because even those guys did not want him to be any further than where he was at, you know, going to the second order. They just did not want it because what he was messing with, they didn't like it, you know. And it's now, I guess, what it's kind of hard to, I don't know. I guess I see your point, because you're just getting into a whole bunch of stuff that you really don't know what you're doing. You're taking somebody's word for it, you know?
Pretty much. And I don't mean to demean anyone who's pursuing
We need
spiritual practices. I mean, a lot of the stuff the Golden Dawn did, because I researched the Golden Dawn a lot, and I don't claim to know everything about it. Most of the texts that exist are by Israeli Regardi.
Yeah.
And Israeli Regardi was not even truly in the Golden Dawn. He was in it, but he was trying to become a protege of Aleister Crowley. And Aleister Crowley wouldn't have anything to do with him.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah. And yet that's probably the most complete text out there on the Golden Dawn. I have that text. And what you'll see in there is there's a lot of knowledge in there. There's a lot of things about banishing hexagrams and, you know, all these different techniques, banishing techniques and sealing rites. The interesting thing is, there's a lot of amalgam, and you mentioned earlier, with the Rosicrucians. Now, the Rosicrucians were not the Golden Dawn.
Right.
There's a lot of crossover there. But Christian Rosicrute, who is a whole different order, you know, is believed to be this mystic who had mystical powers from Christ and that he had communicated to his disciples. You know, remember they found him in the chamber and all that.
Yeah.
So that's a whole nother world. And then you've got the Masons, and then you've got things like the Knights Templar. You've got many, many different orders and a lot of secret stuff going on there. You'll find many of these, and I don't claim to be an authority on all of them, but I've researched a lot of them, and I can tell you the Shemhem Aphorish is all over the place, the Goetic magic. One of the most conclusive, in fact, if you go way back behind, Tritemus, who was really the force and power behind the throne of Agrippa that produced the three books of occult, there's actually four books of occult philosophy. And Donald Tyson has actually done a pretty good job of annotating and translating these documents. And they were out a long time ago. I think they just came out.
I'm real interested to see that translation you're talking about of Abramel and the Mage, because the whole point of that is, well, what they say the whole point of is finding your holy guardian angel.
That's right.
Maybe
that's exactly right.
But how do you know it's not one pretending to be? You see what I'm saying? Like,
well, if you read that book and you see, you'll have no mistake about it. See, and here's what's interesting. If you go back into Christianity, okay, what do you find? Okay, the whole story. And what's very fascinating for Christians in that book, Abramelin, he actually corroborates that Christ and the apostles did exist and they did have the magic.
Yeah,
he actually cites it in there. He said right out, he said, this is the same sacred holy magic that Christ had. And he makes a little innuendo in there, the ones the Christians call God. See, Christ, and I don't want to get into debates here on the radio, but I don't believe Christ ever referred to himself as God.
Nope, he sure didn't.
He didn't, and he was much more humble than that. And in fact, there were many references where he said that. Well, my point is that the Maharil was elegant when he said that this is the same sacred holy magic that all the saints and the prophets had throughout history and time. And if you get into the ancient, like Rabbi Abulafia, I have great respect for, he was hated by the Jews, and he was hated by the Christians. In fact, interesting story, Rabbi Abulafia was visited by a holy angel and told to go visit Pope Nicholas II. Pope Nicholas II, if you research through history, was the one who created Vatican City, where it is right now. And he was told to come and visit him. So he sent a messenger and said, I've been told by an angel of God I have to visit you. And the Pope wrote back and said, if you come and visit me, I will burn you at the stake for heresy.
Wow.
Well, the reason why, and I didn't add that, but he said that you're about ready to create a religion that will mislead the people.
Sure.
Okay. And then, you know, I'm just telling you what it said. So Abulafia, he set off in his moccasins heading towards the Vatican, or I should say the place that Vatican City was about to become. And he knocked on the gates, and they took him in, and the Pope had a heart attack and died instantly. And they incarcerated him and said, well, we're supposed to burn you at the stake here. You know, here's your wood and here's your stake and everything. And they said, but we don't know why. you didn't do anything. You just showed up. So we have no thing at which to charge you for, because you haven't done anything. So get out of here. So they threw him out the gate and away he went. And he wrote some fascinating, there's many people now who have translated some of Abulafia's work. It is some of the most secret and most advanced Kabbalistic documents in text form around. And I have to tell you, it's all about dislodging the consciousness that we all are aware of our perception of reality, and leaving the body and meeting angels, purifying the soul. That is the whole thing. Anybody who thinks that they can control spirits and all that other stuff through direct methods. In fact, another really good text is a text called the Shaarei Kedusha, which is the gates of holiness. It actually is no bones about it. It's the same thing as the Maharil Abramelin text. It says you can't get angels to come to you and have converse with you unless you purify the aura and clean the aura. This is the same thing we've heard. Many, many spiritual groups, monks included, have purified the aura. And if they lead a clean enough life, sooner or later, they will get the barnacles away. And I really believe a lot of it's us. And the angels can actually have converse. And this is where, if you look at the sophistication of ancient astrology, there's no way someone sitting on a mountaintop or on top of a camel and deduced this stuff by watching planets and stars. Not a chance. That's where it came from.
Man, how do I put a hard, you know how they put these little flash drives into the walls now? I don't know if you've seen that, where you can just walk up to it, stick your computer up to it, and download the information, like these hacker guys. It sounds crazy, but it's going to be impossible. But I wish I could stick one of those things in your head and extract everything you know, man.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you're just giving us gem after gem here, and I appreciate it, you know, and appreciate it, because we need to hear this stuff. You guys that, you know, you're practicing magic. I'm not going to lie. I've done banishings and stuff, but
banishing is very good. And I'll tell you what, I really think banishing is wonderful. And I'll tell you what, I have done a lot of that. And I would encourage people to learn that. And I'll tell you what, I've done clearings in properties and houses where I've had some serious stuff that was in there. And believe it or not, a lot of it's with suicides. A lot of it is with, you know, what we call a ghost is really a disincarnate soul trapped in a perception of reality on the other dimension. And if you can get one to realize their condition, they can be moved on. Some of them can't. Some of them actually have to be forcibly moved on. And that's not easy to do. And, but it can be done. They can be incarcerated into a dimension where they're not harming people here. And then when they finally wake up, when in our perception of time could be a minute or it could be 100 years, might be 500 years, then they can release and move on.
Yeah, that's I always talk about Robert Monroe, the guy that practiced astral projection and consciousness ascension. I've read all his books, and everybody tries to do, like, he has his own methods and programs you can listen to, but everybody tries to do it, but they can't do what he done. And I think it's what you're talking about, because this man was a good man. Like, his heart was, I mean, if you just watch any of him talking, how he treats people, he had, I don't know how to explain it, virtues that a lot of us are still working on that were just natural to him, you know? And so maybe he was allowed to do it.
There's a lot of people like that. Yeah. Absolutely. I encourage people to read a book called The Magus of Strobilos. It's one of my more favorite references. Daskalos, who in that book he's nicknamed the teacher, he was an amazing guy. He could heal people on the playground. Little kids would fall down and cut their knees, he'd heal them right away. His professors, or I should say his teachers, he could do Latin and mathematics better than any of his teachers in, I think, like the second grade. And they're like, kid, how are you doing this? And he said, well, it's not me. He says, the father or this angel takes my hand and moves my hand and tells me what to do. Wow. And throughout his life, he could heal people of completely absolutely incurable diseases. One of the best stories in that book was when the author of that book, the Magus of Strobilos, was writing the manuscripts. He had called back over to Cyprus wanting to speak to Daskalos the healer, and he was in the hospital with gangrene in his left leg. And he was writing a book about this healer who now had gangrene, so he flew back over there and went into the hospital. and said, what are you doing? You're the healer. He said, I've seen you heal stuff way worse than this. Well, how come you have gangrene? He says, you don't understand. He says, if I don't take on this karma of one of my little relatives, he says, he's going to die of leukemia. Well, Marchides, the author of the Magus of Strobilus, didn't believe him. So he sat on the edge of the bed, meditated, unwrapped his oozing bandage full of discharge from the gangrene, and now jumped around on a completely healed leg. He says, look, I'm taking this on. So he said, I have to put it back on. And he says, if I don't dissipate the karmic elementals, he will die. So the next thing out of Marchides' mouth, he said, well, how did he get this, you know, horrible karma? You have to read the book, but he actually murdered him three lifetimes ago.
That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. And you know, you can't make this stuff up.
I'm getting messages here, like people that wanted to call in. They're like, listen, I'm not calling in because they want you to keep talking, man. It's crazy. They don't want to interrupt you.
He's amazing. This guy was amazing. And you go back, there's very few people who ever get publicized who have that kind of power. And I believe there's a lot of them on this planet. Why does everyone think we haven't had nuclear war? If it was left up to the devices of most people, look at Jimmy Carter. He was talking about doing tactical nuclear war back in the 70s. I remember that. If human beings, you know, I've actually, Camille has been such a wonderful person for me to be married to, because she's very eclectic. And we used to go sit and listen to military people talk about how they would see light orbs around missile silos.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, they wouldn't work. All the circuit boards were blown. And I mean, these aren't people who just kind of thought that was that. These are people who were lieutenants and colonels. I mean, they would say the stuff didn't work. We had to replace it. And there was a book called Left at Eastgate, where there was all these, there's just this craft that had landed. And shortly thereafter, all the nukes that weren't supposed to be there in a NATO base were removed. So, and that wasn't just one guy in the military. There were several talked about that. So there's all kinds of very interesting phenomena that we don't get much press on that happens. And I really believe, you know, if you read a book like The Magus of Strobilus, you get a bit of a taste of that. And the other one I love is the Maharil, the Book of Abramelin. He literally would go warn kings back in the mid, you know, in the 1400s. He'd tell them, he'd say, if you don't change your ways and stop doing what you're doing, God's going to destroy your kingdom. And the king would, oh, how do you know? You know, and then sure enough, stuff would start happening. And he'd say, I'm not here to curse you. He's, I'm telling you, you're bringing this upon yourself. So even though, you know, we know politicians do what they do, there is some divine thing keeping it all held together. Even though we've got a lot of crazy stuff going on this planet and a lot of bad stuff, there's a lot more good going on. And for some reason, it all keeps bolting together. I think if there's going to be a cataclysm, it's probably in about 240 years from now.
Do you think we can prevent it?
I don't know. I think we might. It might have a lot to do with collective consciousness.
Yeah. Well, we're, you know, time's flown by. We don't have much time at all left. You know, I would like to ask you that, you know, because I've seen you do it on other radio shows, and I'll, you know, can you do a bit of interrogation astrology? Can you give us a small example? So
yeah.
I can just ask you one question about the future of lighting the void, just the future of it. That's all I would ask. And if don't hold back on the negative stuff. That's what I tell. Sometimes I think that, you know, just like I was talking to Chris last night, that maybe I hope you're not afraid. I'm an open book, man. I don't care what my audience hears. I don't, because I believe honesty is key, you know.
Oh, yeah, it is. There's no question about that. It doesn't do any good to do otherwise, you know. I really believe that's why a lot of people have the charts that they have that are difficult. It is karmic energy. And I know I've worked with a lot of people who've had some really, really challenging karma. And I believe that the spiritual remedial measures, that's one of the things that I love about Vedic astrology, as well as the ancient Kabbalistic astrology. You can actually see a condition in a chart and change it. And people will say, well, I thought astrology predicted the future. No, astrology shows what's there if you continue in the same plane of consciousness. And the religions were right about something. And that is, you are higher than astrology. That's why I really get irritated when people say you are your astrology. No, you're experiencing your astrology. And it's very, very powerful. But just like going down the road in a car, it's very, very powerful when you're doing 60 miles an hour and you've got to stop in 3 seconds, right? You better have some mighty good brakes, okay? It's the same kind of analogy. It's forces that are acting upon the soul. But when you become self-aware, you change it. You might not totally take it away, but you change it. That's why the cornerstone of some of these ancient astrologies was to understand it and then find ways to change the soul. So the religions were right in a lot of senses that God is above astrology, no question. But they also call it the work of the devil, and or some of them. And I think a lot of that came, and this is an interesting point on magic, I think a lot of that came when the Vulgate translations came in. And I'll tell you why. There were a bunch of bearded men, a couple of emperors and queens who decided what Christians would believe for the next 1500 years. And not to irritate anybody, I think the same thing happened in other religions, including Judaism, where certain people got a hold of certain perceptions and translations and then concretized it into law. That's the way it is. Like, here's a good example. All divination that is done through spirit was condemned. And that I actually agree with. Summoning a spirit and trying to get information by force is magic. And it's very dangerous. Now, through an angel, that's a whole nother world. But interestingly enough, astrology, when you start taking some of the translations, if you had 10 Aramaic or Hebrew scholars translate something, I guarantee you, you will get 10 slight variations on what they think it means.
Yeah, it's like we're filtering the information all the time, you know?
Yeah, well, it doesn't translate to English linearly. It's like, you know, any other language. It's slightly different, you know? And especially when you're dealing with a cryptographic language that has codes in it. And that's what that is. And here's the point. So I think astrology got thrown in the hopper of the work of the devil with everything else, because what happened is they decided that any divination of any kind was the work of the devil.
Yeah, they quoted that too in scripture.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Oh, I know. I've had people point right, look right here, it says right here. Well, yeah, you're reading an English translation.
Yeah, well, all you got to do is point to the other scripture where they're using it, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, I have texts here in the Bible where the entire Bible is referenced to allegories using astrology.
Yeah, Genesis.
Not entire, but many, many areas of the Bible, right?
Genesis has got some deep stuff in it just by itself, you know?
You know what's interesting is the Lord's Prayer, which starts out, "Our Father who art in heaven," ends in a very ancient Kabbalistic prayer, which is, "Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen."
Right.
Now, that got changed in the Middle Ages, particularly by the Nicene Councils, who wouldn't hear anything other than what they wanted to hear. They were killing each other. The point was, they changed it to, "Thine is the kingdom, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost," right, which is all fine, but you now lose and neuter what originally was meant. In Aramaic, the very first word, "thine is a te,"
yeah,
which is Aleph, Tav, and He. Now, if you break just that one word down, that means all of creation is secretly permeated and cryptographically encoded between the letters of Aleph and Tav, which are the 22 Aramaic or Hebrew letters, mm-hmm, secretly encoded in five books, which is the He, because numerologically, He is five.
Guess there you go, folks. You don't have to worry about doing
Testament.
The. Yeah, you don't have to worry about doing the Kabbalistic cross. That one's okay.
One's good. Yeah. Well, and then it gets into what I was telling you before about the glyphs of the planets. They're sacred.
Yeah.
Nothing about, you know, they're sacred, you know, glyphs. Only Saturn, if you examine astrology, only Saturn has the cross above the crescent of the moon. It's the only one.
Yeah, that's like the barrier or something, right? It's like the
it's
law.
It's previously created beliefs, karmas, or actions now manifest. That's why everyone has such a problem on Saturn returns and Saturn cycles.
Wow, that's interesting, man. Yeah, so like if I came to you and said, listen, I need help. I've got this radio station. You know, I need your services. You know, what's the future of this thing look like? What do I need to look out for? You know, or is that in,
so you're asking the question is, what does my show look like?
Right.
Upcoming, yeah. See, now I'm just typing that in here. And the only reason I do that is because then I know if I ever look at this chart again, I know what you asked. Because otherwise it would just be an astrological chart cast at this time. What drives this, I guarantee you, see now how individual this is? I guarantee you there's nobody named Joseph Roop who's asking me a question about his show on this planet out of 7 billion souls drawing breath plus at this time right now.
Wow.
See, I think about that. And see, what I now look at is the Lord of the 10th is your show because the 10th house is career vocation. It shows, I mean, I have to tell you, it shows the moon is void of course right now. So you'll keep doing the way you're doing. Shows you're going to change soon. Why? The moon is in orb to a square to Mars.
That's not good.
Well, it's not bad either. It just means squares are the nature of change. So it shows, let me just see here. See, it's a receive square. See, this is, you can't get this in modern astrology. Reception is like it actually shows the angelic interaction, if you will, between whether or not this is a severe square or a mitigated square.
Right.
You see, so this is a mitigated square, which shows you'll make change. It shows you're going to come up with a new way to do this, a new format.
Cool. I don't mind change. I just got to recognize it when it happens, when I need to do it, you know? So
yeah, that's what it shows. Because, see, the interesting thing is the moon is Lord of the Seventh. And I would say, let me just look at this. This is an unusual chart. See, when you asked this chart, it was 0 degrees Capricorn rising, which means you might feel a little bit isolated right now on the way you're doing it. It looks like it's doing good, though. I bet people like it, don't they?
Yeah, but I'm more interested in what that chart says, to be honest with you. You know, but yeah, a lot of people do like it because,
yeah.
I mean, you get on the radio, you ask basic questions, and you talk about this and that, and you know, my goal is to treat all my guests as house guests and have mine and my audience learn as much as we can from them. And you know, I gotta tell you, man, you're probably gonna get some service from this station.
One of the things that I like about this is the moon, the all-important moon, is conjunct the fixed star Regulus. That's a good omen because what it shows here, let me just look at this for a minute. See, these things sometimes are riddles. You really have to decode them. Let me just study why that.
Don't hold back on the negative, though, for sure.
Well, yeah, sometimes it takes me a little time because, see, this, whenever I see a chart like this one, it doesn't mean anything bad's happening. It shows it's going good.
I tell you what, let's take like a 5-minute break or whatever.
Sure.
Let's do that and then have you study that. And then we're going to come right back with Jeff Harmon. We might be able to take a phone call, but we're running out of time here. So just stay tuned. All right. I think I feel like I had to play a sad song. I feel like I might be getting some bad news, but apparently it may not be. It's all right. I'm going to keep on trucking. We're back with Jeff Harmon. We're coming to the end of the show here, and he's doing what's called interrogation astrology, is what he does something for his clients constantly. So what'd you come up with there, Jeff? Did I give you enough time?
Well, I cast it another way, too, in the Jyotish astrology. And I would say, you know, people like the show, and I would say continue doing it. What I would say is that you're going to find you're going to change the format and broaden it down the line. So that's not bad news. It's actually good news.
Like broaden it, huh?
Yeah. you're going to be getting into all kinds of stuff here is what it looks like. No, I'd encourage you with this.
Okay, cool. That's the, you know, what's funny about that is the same thing that the numerologist told me last night. He said, don't be afraid to change, you know, do it.
Well,
when it, you know,
you, know you just brought up something that I like to tell people about astrology. You know, I notice one of the things I see in here is you might want to believe in yourself more, because astrology is a double-edged sword. There's another type of astrology called electional astrology. And it's interesting. I notice people who are very strong and forceful, they don't ask me whether or not they're going to be successful. They say, hey, give me a good time because I'm going to do something.
There you go.
I'm going to file a corporation. I'm going to, like a lot of times I'll have, believe it or not, people break ground at a certain time. Like if they're building a very important building, they'll call me and the contractors don't even know it. But the guy telling them, I want you to break ground right at this time. I want you to start digging this morning. You see, at a certain time. And a lot of times the guy running the backhoe doesn't know why. He's getting a check. He does it. So, in fact, there's actually a mural of George Washington wearing the Masonic apron, and they had actually broke the ground at a specific time in a ceremony of the Capitol. So, and it's pretty safe to say the U.S. Capitol has wielded quite a bit of power over this world.
You mean the New Egypt? Is that what you mean?
Right. Yeah, that's right. It's exactly what D.C. is. It's, you know, it stands for District of Columbia. Right. It's not even in the United States. It's an Egyptian temple.
You know, man, everything you say is spot on. I remember back when I was in my early 20s, I had a bad anxiety issue, really bad, you know, just awful panic disorder and stuff. And I just, man, I got desperate. And something told me, and this was my gut that told me this, open the Bible and go to Psalms right now, right?
So you need to get the Shemush Tehillim. You will love that book. You will gain a respect for the Psalms. It'll blow your hair back.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I opened the Psalms, and I forget the verse. I forget which one it was, but it was about, it was a banishing verse. I know it now, but I didn't know it then, you know? And I would say it, and something in my gut would say it again, say it louder, right? And I would just say it over and over again, louder and louder and louder. And then all of a sudden, I got this, it felt like somebody stuck a needle in my spine, right? And this just jolt of energy. And we got a pretty hard steel door up there where I was praying. And this thing, I say it's praying, I'm not real sure what it was, but this door flew open.
That's what it is, yeah.
Flew open, stuff outside flew in, and there was wind whirling around. And I'm like, no one's going to believe this. And I was like, you know what, they don't have to. And I took a nap after that. I hadn't took a nap in 3 months.
Wow.
And that's pretty, you know, it's just stuff you say. It just validates things that have happened to me, man, you know.
Well, I can tell you this, you know, there's an old scripture that says we are actually sons and daughters of the Most High, and the scripture cannot be broken. That book I mentioned a couple times, the Nefesh, which is called The Constriction of Divine Energy, is astounding. It was actually penned back in the 1700s, so it's not that old. But what's fascinating about it is how it talks about we literally, we don't think so. And I really do blame the religions on this. If they were really out to help everybody, they'd be teaching people this stuff, not just running around with microphones saying, praise the Lord, which there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mind that. But you know, it's a little deeper than that, folks, yeah. Maybe. So, yeah. You know, I mean, when you find out just how profound this stuff is, and you can't make this stuff up. I mean, it's like the Zodiac. All the astronomers rip on, oh, the Zodiac doesn't line up with the true constellations. Well, they never did, folks, you know. It's a spiritual matrix.
Yeah, well, how do you find the houses then? I mean, ask them to find that. It's really...
Well, you can. And again, science wants to repeat something. You can't. Never the same way. Because you're dealing with recreated reality constantly. It's like, you know, to the skeptics, they'd say, well, you know, you could get another time when, you know, Joseph Roop asked the chart. You can't ever ask that chart and get the same chart again. Now, that doesn't mean you can't ask it again. What I'm saying is you'll never get this chart. If you say the solar system is going around the central sun at 480-something plus 1,000 miles an hour, in fact, there's actually a guy on the internet who showed the planets are spiraling in orbit behind the sun. It's going so fast. NASA actually has some kind of a model of that as well. And if you take on your telephone, you have 10 numbers omitting the star and the pound, if you include zero, right? You got 1 through 9 plus zero. And you can call anybody on the planet with a combination of numbers. Now, in astrology, you have a solar system racing around literally billions of fixed stars. We only use a small number of them compared to what's really there. And you take the lunar zodiac, the sidereal zodiac, the tropical zodiac, plus you have 12 houses, 12 signs. You have 360 degrees. You have infinite geometric aspects that they're all making to each other at their respective speeds, retrogradations. You literally could create a reality from it. And I think one has been created from it. And I'm not saying the astrology is the only thing creating reality. It's certainly one that's interplaying with it.
Well, you know, I would like to have your friend on here at the, if he could ever come on the show, that'd be great. If your buddy that studies quantum physics.
Oh, yeah, that's Claude Swanson. He wrote a book, actually wrote two books called The Synchronized Universe.
Right, okay. I thought you said his name was Steven. I'm sorry.
No, Claude Swanson.
Okay, cool. Yeah, if he could come on the show, because I'm fascinated with that stuff, too. That stuff is incredible.
Claude's a great guy. And he's, you know, he comes from a very linear scientific background. But, you know, he's gone and studied John of God. He's studied many paranormal phenomena. And what I love is he doesn't claim to have the answer, but he comes from a very linear background. And has now said, okay, we need to rethink the way we do science so that we can allow for this phenomena. You can't put infinite reality into three-dimensional, five-sense terms. You know, even quantum physicists and string theory physicists and new scientists, they still have to couch it all, even mathematically, into our myopic way of analyzing things. Right. Once you get past the three-dimensional, five-sense paradigm, we really can't get it any other way other than somehow to explain it within that context. And that's, I think, the dangers of truly astral travel and getting people into that realm, because you can flip your cookies playing around that with air, because it's our perception of reality. You know, people try to get there with drugs, and it's very dangerous because it destroys the aura. In fact, there's an old saying, alcohol used to be called spirits. I don't know why they change it, because it really does break down the aura and let spiritual energy come in. That's very negative. So, you know, and many people do mind-altering drugs, which I think is very dangerous. And with most of the true spiritual people who did astral travel really were very adept at understanding the dangers of it. Well, one of the better books to get into that is a nice beginning primer is Esoteric Teachings by Dr. Stylianos. It's at stoicseries.com. That's the kind of stuff where he actually teaches you how to get in control of what we would call the astral body. He calls it the etheric double. We all have one. It's the place we go to when we step out of this body at night, every night, and also when we pass on.
Man, that is fascinating stuff, Jeff. And we're at the end of the show here. And there's, you know, if I wanted to be a student of yours, or if I wanted to hire you for your services, which I got to say, it's really tempting. I don't think it would hurt. Do we just go to jeffharman.com? Is that how we do that?
Yeah. It's Jeff, H-A-R-M-A-N, not O-N, jeffharman.com. And Camille, she's wonderful. My wife Camille does all the bookings and interacts with people. And thank God she does, because I couldn't keep up with it. But she's really great at getting back to people. And again, what I love about doing astrology now is the powerful computer systems that I have and programs allow me to do interpretation so much quicker. And I think where people really benefit is they can sit there, anybody who has a computer, anybody who has an internet connection, I have people watching it on iPhones now and mm-hmm. Androids. I mean, it's amazing. And you can screen record this thing and make a movie of it with audio in it. And that's where it's really powerful, you know, and because you can see the maps, the location astrology. You can see the doshas and the cycles and the transits. Plus, I have a lot of PowerPoint stuff that I refer to help people understand it all in plain English. And it really... is that that's one of the things I've been unlearning is some of the stuff that I've learned through many teachers that I think wasn't good. And the best teacher to me has been the ancient texts and doing astrology, you know, just seeing what works and what doesn't.
So we can get a hold of you, and that's by appointment, right? If you do something like that, it's a one-on-one yeah. session.
Yeah, it's a one-on-one session by appointment. And I record the phone line as well. And again, I tell people record the screen recording. If you have a Macintosh, Macs do it. They got a built-in QuickTime recorder right in it. If you have a PC, I always tell people go get a program called Bandicam. It's Bandi. It's a free download, but the problem is it only records for 10 minutes. And I think it's $38 and you buy the professional version. And well worth it, because then your PC will actually screen record anything on the screen. If you flew here and did a session with me, it wouldn't be as good as you sitting in your own home
right.
or your own and watching it.
Because of the technology and all the stuff that you can record, yeah.
Still clear, crystal clear, and it's instant. You can see me point to everything. And again, you got the comfort of your own home, you know.
Right. Well, Jeff, I really appreciate you coming on the show, man. I hope one day, you know, you could come back on the show when you're not busy and, you know, really, man, I could pick your brain for hours, you know, but
I enjoy
we got to respect your time, you know.
Yeah. Oh, no problem. And I appreciate you having me on.
Not a problem. That's Jeff Harmon, folks. That's what you guys wanted. That's a real astrologer. You can go to jeffharmon.com and get his services. Tomorrow night we have Sarah Deutsch with the Magical Mandalas and the Soul's Creativity. Stick around. Don't forget to sign up for the newsletter. All right, folks. Bye.